This podcast is produced by KPP Financial, Steve Peasley, President. For more than 20 years, helping Americans plan their retirement years with confidence. And now, our podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Invest Talk. This is our March 27th, 2017 edition of Invest Talk, and we're here to bring you some useful information and hopefully some answers to your questions live during our 4 to 5 Pacific time hour. Or you can always leave your question on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART, and we will try to answer it, maybe not the next show, but you know, soon after that. And we'll get to those questions in a moment. But first, thanks to everyone who attended our Saturday Morning Wealth Conference in San Jose this past weekend. I always enjoy meeting our listeners and finding out what's on their mind, what's important to them. And I hope those that attended found it worthwhile to join us. And Steve and I both thank you for attending, spending time with us this last Saturday. I know we didn't get to, I think, as much fundamental analysis as we would have liked to. So I apologize for that, for anybody that was maybe a little bit disappointed in how much we covered. But I have an idea for some upcoming webinars that might make up for that. So keep an eye out on that. Now today it sounds like a simple active versus passive debate, but there are deeper questions. Should you just buy an index fund? It's one of our main talking points today. Now, each Friday, our premium newsletter goes out to subscribers. So let's kind of skim the content of this past week so you get a sense of what was in there. In our current market conditions section, which Steve writes, is the focus for market participants was all on Washington. And we offer some background and views on the lackluster performance for all of March in the markets. And mainly it's the unwinding of the Trump trade, and we get into a little bit more of that. And we had some interesting economic data on housing. We look at other telling numbers, including monthly durable goods report, which was a bit disappointing. We also look deeper at the core goods, which tries to ferret out what the rest of corporate America is spending its money on. Because what corporate America is spending their money on is very important to the overall economy. And how much they are spending is very important, right? So as you watch your portfolio grow in the past few months, the question is, should you take some profits at this point? Some thoughts on that as well, and some other suggestions for near-term strategies going forward. That's what Steve discusses. Now, each week, we also offer some stock ideas in our newsletter, along with portfolio management tips and a section that gives you some personal finance tips on how to maybe save money. That's one of our more important things that we offer our listeners, and this is very valuable for, I think, everybody that reads it. All of our clients get it for free. It's $10 a month for all of our listeners, but you get it every week, you know, so it's basically $2.50 per newsletter, so that's pretty cheap. Now, if you do want to sign up, there is no risk. You can sign up for a month free and just go there and investtalk.com to sign up. Now, what money matters are on your mind today? I'm ready for any money questions at 888-99-CHART. So let's get to the phones and take this question from our 24-hour listener line.
Hey, Steve and Justin. I got an unconventional question for you. At least I haven't heard it asked on your program. I'm 43 years old, have a net worth of about $700,000. I live in Nebraska, so housing is much less expensive here, and I have a paid-off home worth about $100,000. That is included in that $700,000. I have another $100,000 in cash. So that means the remaining 70% of my net worth is in stock. Mutual funds, half of those index, half of those actively managed. And in that mutual fund holding, it's very well diversified. Growth, value, large cap, small cap. Now, when I went in to see my CPA to do taxes this year, he told me that scared him, that 70% of my net worth at 43 years old was in stock mutual funds. wanted to see what you think and get your opinion and your feedback. Do I need to have more in cash, waiting for maybe a market downturn, or perhaps buy some real estate? I'm not married, no kids. I just wanted to know what you guys think. Thank you.
All right, this is a great question. I love this question because this goes to a lot of different factors, and he kind of gave me a pretty good picture of what he's invested in, what his personal balance sheet looks like. And first, you have to start off with your risk tolerance. Having all that money in the equity markets, especially when the markets are this high and overvalued, I would say is definitely a risky endeavor. Now, you may be very risk tolerant and you can handle volatility, and that might well be good. However, if at 43, having $700,000in your net worth, that's pretty good. You're in a pretty good situation to get where you probably need to be in retirement. And this goes back to what Steve does when he sits down with clients to figure out, okay, how much do you have? What is your what do you need to achieve retirement, or our financial freedom is what we'd like to call it? And should you take less risk simply because you are so far along in the investment or in your in achieving your goals, right? Say you only need $1 million to live off of because of where you live, the cost of living, and maybe you're not somebody who's going to be traveling the world. You have a pretty low monthly need for cash flow, and you don't really need to be taking a lot of risk, right? You're not you're risking that nest egg to try to get to a place sooner than you really need to, right? Whatever that dollar amount is, most likely. So the odds are, yes, even if your risk tolerance is high, which it may not be, you should probably diversify, reduce the risk in your portfolio, maybe move into, I would say, individual bonds. I wouldn't say bond funds. So part of your portfolio probably should be moved into individual bonds, something that will be a better diversifier for your portfolio, give a little more yin to the yang, and I would say yes, you should reduce that. Now, how much? That takes a deeper conversation, and that's something that Steve can do if you wanted to set up a time to talk with him. But you definitely want to consider reducing your risk on the stock side. Let's go to James in Sonoma. How you doing, James?
Well, we're doing pretty good today. I wanted to talk to you about the GIS, General Mills. Mm-hmm. I own a position in it already.
Okay.
In my IRA. It's I'm one of these guys, as you just mentioned, your previous caller, that market's overvalued.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of the ones that, of course, even it's now near its 52-week low, and has a good dividend, and it's going in my IRA, and I'm just thinking of adding to position because I can't figure out anyplace else to put this. There's not a lot of stocks that are at the low end, and I don't think this company is going to go away. The dividend increases every year, and it looks like the dividend's pretty safe, although it is a little high as far as the ratio is concerned. What do you think?
Well, it is a little high. You know, the payout ratio is about 70%, so that's kind of at near the, I don't want to say the limit, but the high end of where we would like to see a payout ratio be, and the cash dividend payout ratio, which is, the payout ratio is considering earnings per share. The cash dividend payout ratio is considering cash flow, and they're both about the same. So they're still kind of at that limit. That technically, the chart is in a downtrend, and I'm not sure it's going to stop until at least, let's say, $56 a share. So, you know, you're relatively close to that. It certainly could go all the way down into the low 50s. I would not be shocked by that at all. General Mills, it's relatively stable company, relatively anti-cyclical, which I like that. But, you know, the dividend at three and a quarter, that's good, but it's not so high that it's going to prevent the price from going down further. Are you retired, James?
Nope. I'm the same age as Steve. I got another couple of years to go.
Okay, but you're pretty close to retirement.
I tend to build up my portfolio with all dividend, especially in the IRA dividend paying stocks. That's dividends.
Gotcha. Okay. So you're really focused on that income, which makes sense. And this is about the time that you want to start transitioning that way. You know, most of our clients that are in our balanced income program are kind of around your age or in retirement. So that makes a lot of sense. The issue with General Mills is their profitability is weakening a bit. And there's if you look at their industry, you know, cereals are not doing that well. People are becoming more health conscious, and everyone's moving away or more to organic products, and that's where the growth is, right? Kind of not your typical brands that you see at the standard grocery store anymore. And so that's where General Mills is struggling. So I don't really like it kind of long term, because I just think they haven't made the changes to really adapt. So I would say I would reduce my position, maybe not get rid of it completely, but I definitely wouldn't be adding to it, especially at these levels, because it's not uber cheap. You know, for me, I would need to get this of a dividend yield above 5%. And then I'd say, okay, now it's very cheap. For example, we have a packaged food company that we invested in that's yielding 5%, right? And it is in that kind of alternative space. And I think that's a much better investment, anti-cyclical dividend investment. It's not as big of a company, but I think it's safer in a lot of ways. So I would not be adding to General Mills. Thanks, James. I'm financial advisor and licensed realtor Justin Klein. What's your money question? What are my options for my old 401k or 403b plan when I start at a new firm? Maybe that's your question. Should I change from a monthly mortgage payment to a bi-weekly mortgage payment? Something I'll talk about. If my retirement accounts are fully funded, how should I invest the rest of my cash? That's another question. There's tons of questions. It's endless, and I would love to answer any of them. 888-99-CHART is our live listener line every weekday from 4 to 5 Pacific time. Let's go to Matthew in Kansas City. How are you doing, Matthew?
Good. How are you, Justin?
Doing great. What can I do for you?
Well, I had a comment and a question on the stock sales, okay?
Go for it.
I know you guys give lots of advice to people, and I'd like to help out. I'm a CPA, and I always hear you guys getting questions about IRAs.
Uh-huh.
And Steve was talking the other day, the limits are $5,500 and $6,500, and you can max out a 401k and a IRA in the same year.
Yeah, yeah, I know.
It is possible with tax planning.
Yeah. Good. Great point, because I know sometimes Steve gets confused about that. But, yeah, you can do both.
My question on PBC, People's Financial Bank.
Okay.
I picked up a half a position at about $14.50, and I'm kind of nervous about picking up the second half where it is now. I was going to see if you thought about waiting until around 15, or go ahead and.
I would sell your other half. I don't like financials at all. This whole Trump reflation trade is unwinding, and I think it's going to continue unwind because I think it's going to take a lot to get his policies through, and the market is grossly over exaggerating, I think, his ability. And the healthcare bill is an example of getting these things through Congress. It's going to take a lot longer than people are expecting for any of these if he gets them all passed at all. So I would sell this on a bounce. I think you'll get back to that level of 14 and change where you bought it.
Okay, and you wouldn't pick up any more?
Nope. Not at these levels. Back at 14, maybe,
okay.
But not here. This is Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein. 888-99-CHART is our live listener line number from 4 to 5 Pacific time. Give us a call. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. That's how you get through and ask your question. This hour, we have about 40 minutes left in the show. No, 35 minutes left in the show. Goes by quick, so give us a call. We're going to get to Anthony in a minute. But let's take a look at the market today. We had the Dow down 45, the S&P down 2, and the NASDAQ was up 11. Really was down pretty big overnight and rallied most of the day. Really because people are thinking tax reform is still on. But like I said before, I think this whole Trump rally is false. It's just not going to last because, frankly, Washington is very hard to move. And, you know, this isn't something I'm saying is a huge fault of Trump's. It's any president. Look at Obamacare. It took 3 years to really pass, right? And so no matter what president comes on, you just have to deal with a lot of hurdles to get your things, your agenda passed, because there's a lot of people you have to answer to, a lot of constituents, of representatives in Congress, and they have their own wishes, their own wants, their own agendas, their own things that they want passed and they want to get done for their constituents, and still a lot to handle. So all these things that are on Trump's plate are just simply going to take a lot longer than anybody expects. And odds are they won't be as impactful as most people expect either, because they tend to get watered down in the process. And just like this healthcare bill was as well. So I'm still not buying the Trump trade, and I don't think you should either. Let's go to Anthony Hayward. How you doing, Anthony?
Good. Hey, Justin. I have a question about Whole Foods Market, ticker symbol WFM. And I was wondering, what do you think about shorting this particular stock?
No, we actually like Whole Foods, and we own it for our managed accounts. We would actually buy it. And I was looking at some newer accounts to add to this position today. I think Whole Foods will be fine. They're certainly dealing with a more competitive marketplace as other stores bring on organic food, and Costco has organic products as well. But that, to me, there's still the Band-Aid, right? Everyone calls the Band-Aids, gauze with tape attached to them, Band-Aids, whether they're actually a Band-Aid or not. So to me, they're like the Band-Aid of the whole food, or not the whole, the organic food and healthy food space. And I think they'll continue to adjust their business model. They're coming out with the 365 stores, will have smaller footprints, cheaper products. And I think they'll eventually figure it out, and their traffic will still stay strong. And there's going to be Whole Food customers are usually pretty unwavering, and so they have a strong affinity to go there on a regular basis. So I still like Whole Foods. I would not be shorting it. What makes you want to short it?
Well, for one, basically the concern about the other competitors, namely Trader Joe's and Sprouts. Even though Sprouts, there's been some news about them merging with Albertsons. But you know, just the competition, and them being, you know, they're expensive. And I go in there like 3 times a year just to kind of, you know, for something different. I'm not a regular shopper. So that's really kind of my concern, is it's so niche. So I just wanted to kind of get your input on it. I mean, it's interesting. Do you see this rebounding soon?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's been kind of hanging around this $30 level for a while, and to me, it's just trying to find that base. You know, it's declined from about $65 a share at the high of 2013, and it's come down a lot because of this worry. So a lot of what you're talking about is already priced in. I mean, if you look at the statistics, its operating to earnings yields 8.45%. That's pretty strong, and their cash from operations is back. You know, it dipped a little bit in 2015 and 16, but it's back with a vengeance and almost near all-time highs last quarter. So I think they're doing a good job of adjusting, and I think they'll continue to adjust, and there'll be growing pains. But I think long-term, there's still a lot of growth potential for Whole Foods. Their brand is very strong, and I'm still a fan of Whole Foods. Thanks, Anthony. Let's go to Adijit in San Jose. How you doing, Adijit?
Good. How are you, Justin?
I'm great. What can I do for you?
Yeah, I wanted to know your opinion about SunPower. I was planning to buy a few shares of SunPower and just wanted to know what you think about that.
Okay. So is this a play on the whole solar space, or you really like them as a company? Why SunPower?
Because their share price kind of dropped by a lot within last 6 months or a year.
Mm-hmm.
And compared to other solar companies, this looked to me more stable and a good value.
Well, you know, this one's tough because it's an industry that, from an economic standpoint, it's just not a sustainable industry yet. You know, it gets more competitive every year, but companies like SunPower are losing money, and they continue to burn cash, and that's why I'm not a big fan of it. They still have a lot of debt, so I would stay away from SunPower. It's in a downtrend. It doesn't look like it's going to end anytime soon. Give us a call, 888-99-CHART.
Our podcast continues next. We want you to know about our new expanded Insider program. It has a whole new look and expanded content from name brand resources all over the financial world. And you look in the archives to find webinars from the past, take your pick, and info sheets to keep you up to date on financial matters in a quick, concise way. So join our Insiders program. It's free. Just go to investtalk.com and click on the Invest Talk tab and look for the Insiders program. Invest Talk continues, and next time, getting out of the market is much easier than getting back in. Great investment mistakes, the bear trap. That's one of our topics next time on Invest Talk. We hope you can join us then.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Now, should one just buy the index? It's our main talking point today. And, you know, the active versus passive debate has been in full raging inferno mode lately, right? Where tons of money is going away from active and into passive funds, meaning index funds. The question is, should one just buy the S&P instead of a diversified global portfolio, which has had lower returns over the past 6 years? Or should you just use index funds as an end-all be-all? And I think the answer, if you look at the statistics, is no. Indexes are a piece of the investment puzzle, but they are not the answer, right? Because there's various indexes, first of all. So which index do you want to use? And then what portion of your assets should be invested in that particular index? And it's only one piece of the puzzle when you're looking at your whole financial picture. How do you divide between savings, between cash, stocks, bonds, real estate, commodities, etc.? Right? And active funds, or not active, index funds, they tend to have no downside protection. And in strong downtrending markets, there's no risk mitigation, no peace of mind, nothing like that. Now, if you look back in history, the enthusiasm for passive investment increases after strong bull markets, such as like the late 90s and obviously the last few years. But if you look at the statistics, most of the time, if you're going just year by year, active actually outperforms, but only in certain types of markets. Now, If you go back at the study went back a 20-year period, ending March 2016. Out of the 15 rolling 3-year periods that were negative, active outperformed in 14 out of the 15. Meaning, in the markets not doing so hot, active investing does much better than passive, meaning indexing, right? So you rather be in active funds in those instances. Now, in all 10 periods when returns were above 18% over annualized over a 3-year period, the index funds did better. And then all the middle periods where it was not negative, but still positive, but below 18%, active also did slightly better. So if the market's kind of ho-hum, more choppy, or in a downtrend, active tends to do better. And why is that? Well, because managers tend to make value judgments. And when the market's just roaring up because of cheap money, which is what we've seen over the past 5 to 7 years, the market doesn't care because money's cheap and valuations don't really matter. But to a manager, valuations do matter. Trends do matter. Now, in every major cycle that you've seen throughout the world, investors' emotions frequently cause them to react to performance, and that's usually recent performance. And that's selling after big market declines, especially big ones, and then buying following market advances, especially long, persistent ones where you have gains year after year after year, which is obviously the opposite of buying low and selling high, which is the goal. Now, you can see this most clearly in the recent cycle now. Especially when you're looking at U.S. versus foreign stocks. Okay. Now, from 2002 to 2007, foreign stocks did much better. They did. They did much better. And then you had a kind of a choppy period from 2008 to 2011, where it was kind of went sideways. U.S. and foreign did about the same. Bad, generally, right? Because you had the bear market. And then in 2011 till today, U.S. stocks outperformed. So what's happening right now is a lot of people are saying, well, I just want to be in U.S. stocks. It's U.S. stocks are the best place to be. Right? It's done so well. U.S. stocks are safe because Europe's struggling and China's struggling and, you know, oil prices are ravaging countries like Brazil and Canada. Well, guess what? U.S. stocks are now close to their highest relative valuation level in the last 20 years, meaning they're very, very expensive. And which means it's a much better time to be allocating your capital to foreign investments. Foreign stocks rather than U.S. stocks. Now, they both could go down, realize that, but the odds are better that we're moving into a time where foreign stocks are going to be outperforming U.S. stocks. So I hope that gives you some perspective on active versus passive and how you don't chase performance, especially if you're only looking back 3, 5, 6, 7 years. Because the odds are the next 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years are going to be very different than what you're looking at in the past. Now let's get back to our 24-hour listener line, our anytime line, and pick up a question at 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Stephen, Justin. My name is Matthew. I have a question regarding tax-free income funds. In particular, the one I'm looking at right now is Franklin, New Jersey Tax-Free Income Fund Class A, ticker symbol FRNJX. Just want to know what you think about it, and can you also explain how this fund really works and regarding its holdings, and if you would recommend it as well. Thank you for your advice, and have a good day. Bye-bye.
So he's looking at the Franklin New Jersey Tax-Free Income A, Class A Fund. And first off, I look at that Class A Fund, and I go, uh-oh, and that means a load. I'm hoping you're not getting sold this. If you are, you should run from whoever that is because they're going to make a 4.25% load on that particular sale to you. So I would not be buying the loaded version of this fund. They might have a no-load version of the fund because it does get a 4 out of 5 star on Morningstar, which is pretty good. Expense ratio is 0.64%, fairly low, you know, not too high. It yields about 4% tax-free. That's pretty good. You need to probably live in New Jersey for really to get the full tax benefits, so hopefully you do live in New Jersey. How it works is they just invest in New Jersey municipal bonds, meaning bonds that are issued by municipalities within the state of New Jersey and gives you that tax write-off as a New Jersey resident. So you don't have to claim this income or on your taxes for your state income tax. Okay. Now what the rules are for New Jersey and federal, you know, you have to talk to your accountant on that, but that's the main reason. to be invested in this fund. If you don't live in New Jersey, there's probably not a lot of tax, positive tax implications for investing in this. So it's not a bad fund. The fees aren't very high, but then again, it's a loaded mutual fund, so the fees should be very low. So I would go and look at whatever the no load, no transaction fee version of this fund is. See what those expenses are. If they're above 1%, then I'd probably move on, because I doubt that this is going to be a cheap fund. You know, any bond fund with over a 1% fee is probably pretty expensive, so I'd avoid it. But it's not a terrible fund, except for that big 4.25% load. Definitely avoid that at all costs, because why would you spend 4.25% of your money just to get into a mutual fund when there's thousands of other ones out there for you to choose from without that load? Now, if you're an InvestTalk Insider already, you may have noticed this new look. For you, your insider InvestTalk Insider membership means you can now browse a very comprehensive selection of in-depth financial news and background articles from top name sources. And when you select the Insider Archives, you have access to a broad range of helpful info sheets, and you have access to instant access to any of our wealth webinars, such as The Upside of Lower Oil Prices, Global Value Investing, Survival and Opportunity in Volatile Market. All those webinars are there for you to rewatch. Now, if you're not an insider, sign up. It's free. Just do it right now on investtalk.com. Click on the InvestTalk tab and then InvestTalk Insider. So take a look at our new look, and just click on the InvestTalk tab on investtalk.com.
Steve has some new checkup days for Northern California. Each month, he sets aside these one-hour blocks to review retirement portfolios. He'll be in San Jose April 5th and then San Ramon April 25th. And of course, no matter where you live, you can take advantage of his checkups by Skype or telephone. Just go to investtalk.com and look for the InvestTalk tab and then Portfolio Review.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Now, is your risk tolerance at war with your risk capacity? Now, these are two very separate things. You know, on our website, we have a risk questionnaire, and we use this for a lot of clients to understand, are they an aggressive investor? Are they moderate investor? Are they conservative? Where do they lie on the risk spectrum? And then we try to fit a strategy that will work for them, that makes sense for them and their risk tolerance, but also their goals, right? Because goals are very important in context to your risk tolerance. Now, let's look at two different scenarios. First is somebody who's 23 years old, and they just started a new job, and they've seen their parents, they got ravaged by the financial crisis, right? Their stock portfolio, their investment portfolio went down huge. Their parents maybe panicked, and they sold out, and they didn't really get back in. It scarred them from the market, right? And she saw that, and she also doesn't have a high ability for risk or risk tolerance. So she puts all her 401k contributions in a stable value fund, which is pretty much the safest option in a company plan, right? So her risk tolerance is low, but her capacity for risk should be high because she's young. The gyrations in the market aren't going to matter in 30, 40 years, right? So she should be aggressive, even though her risk tolerance is low, okay? Then there's the flip side. Say it's a couple, they're in their 30s, they're renting an apartment, but they want to buy a home, okay? They have a job and they're in a 401k, and their 401k has gone up dramatically over the last 7 years, and they have a high tolerance for risk because they see how great the market can be when it's in an uptrend and everything's great. They feel everything's great. They're confident in the market, high risk tolerance, but they have this chunk of money that they're willing to put in the market to earn on, but they're going to need it in the next 6 to 9 months to put down on a home. So their risk tolerance may be high, but their capacity for risk is actually very low. because they need this money soon, right? And say that's it's $100,000. What happens if they put it in the market and the market goes down 20%? And all of a sudden they have only $80,000. Well, that's that $20,000 can be a huge difference in what they can buy for a home, right? Because at $100,000, that's 20% down on a $500,000 home. $80,000 is now only 20% down for a $400,000 home. And that $100,000 difference in home that they purchase can be huge when it comes to the amenities, the neighborhood that they want, the square footage, the number of bedrooms. Can be a big difference. It also may prevent them from buying a home at all. Maybe they really needed $100,000 because anything they're willing to buy is not going to be below $500,000 in value. Okay? So see how these two different scenarios can change the way you invest your portfolio, invest your money. You may have low risk tolerance, but your risk capacity should be higher. And this is something that, you know, Steve talks about with clients, is not only what's your risk tolerance, but what are your goals going forward? When do you plan to retire? When do you plan to buy a home? All of these are factors that truly matter. So be aware of this and understand that just because you're willing to take a certain amount of risk doesn't mean it's exactly that amount of risk you should take. It can vary with different parts of your asset base based on the goals of that particular portfolio or that particular account. Okay? 888-99-CHART is our number, 888-992-4278. We have 10 minutes left in the show, so give us a call. Now, I want to get to a question from Steve. He emailed me over the weekend. He said, "Hi, Steve or Justin, I have a question for InvestTalk. I was looking into REITs, trying to pick one for my portfolio. I was wondering what your thoughts were on New Residential Investment Corporation. NRZ is the symbol. They seem to be a relatively new group, but their dividend payout is great at 11.2%. But he saw the payout ratio above 100%, so that concerns him. They also have a fair amount of debt, and he's not sure whether the normal levels are for REITs, since they have mentioned it's usually pretty high. Or since we have mentioned it's usually pretty high. So I'm going to take a look at this over the break, and I'm going to answer Steve's question after the break on NRZ. But I want to hear from you. Give us a call before the end of the show, 888-99-CHART. Now I'm getting to Steve's question, who asked about NRZ, New Residential Investment. They are a real estate investment trust engaged in investing and managing investment-related residential real estate. So they're certainly on, somewhat the riskier side of the market. Let me look at the chart real quick. It looks like they've been in a strong uptrend, so that's a positive. They've been moving. This is an interesting one. It's been quite the mover. It started in 2015 around $12 a share, call it $13 a share. Went as high as almost $18 a share. Went all the way back down to $10, and now we're back up to $17. So from a technical perspective, you're coming up into major, major, major resistance. So I'd be weary of that. If you look at the key statistics, their cash flow is very strong. I don't have a worry about the stability of the dividend, okay, in the near term, because their cash flow is very, very good. Cash dividend payout ratio is about 80%, so they're fine on that front. So it does yield about 11.5%, but this is pretty risky. So realize that they do have a lot of debt, and it's risky because it's in the residential space. And you saw what happened during the last real estate bust. We go into recession, they're certainly going to have issues. So it's anything that's yielding 11% in this market, it's going to be high risk. So this is not a low risk 11% investment, and you're coming up to technical resistance. I don't love it. I don't hate it. You need to just have very high risk tolerance if you're going to invest in NRZ. Let's go to Jack in Fremont.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
No problem.
Just had a quick question. I on the non-retirement account funds that I have, mm-hmm. I've basically split it between the total stock market index, that's the VTSAX, and the total international stock index, which is VTIAX, and mm-hmm. VGSLX, which is really a REIT index fund. Wanted to get your perspective on if that's a good mix or if I should be changing the allocations.
Well, I like that you have an international kind of bent to it, because VTI, or the Vanguard Total Market Index, does have, I believe, has foreign exposure, correct? Am I wrong with that?
Yes, the international fund does have.
What about the other one, the VT, the Total Stock Market Index?
That, I believe, is just U.S. I need to check.
Yeah, you're right. It is all U.S. So is that like a third?
Yeah, it's more like 40%, 20%, 20% right now. I know it doesn't add up to 100, but the rest.
Yeah. My worry is that you're over-indexed. Like I said earlier, in strong trending markets, indexes do well. In choppier, bear markets, which I believe we're entering, at least a choppy market, I think the stock market gains that we've seen over the last 7 or 8 years are going to be, you're not getting that again over the next 7, 8 years. It's just not going to happen. I don't care at what anyone says, you're not going to have those type of returns again, or that type of market, at least in the medium term. So I think you're over-indexed. Is the value over $100,000? Say that.
Yes.
Okay. Then to me, you need to be looking at individual names. How much experience do you have?
Not a whole lot. I mean, I go with indexing because of the costs associated with it, or the low costs.
Gotcha. To us, that's just a small factor, and low cost is good. And like I said earlier, it's not a bad to have part of your portfolio in index funds. But I think you're way over indexed with obviously all of your investments as index funds. And REITs, I think, are good in the near term, but long term, we are in a rising rate environment, I think. So I would be maybe in the next rally on REITs, I would reduce that position, reduce your VTI or total stock market index, your U.S. position, maybe increase your foreign position, and start getting into some individual names. Start researching individual companies, trying to find good values. You're looking to lower your costs. Well, there's the cost to buy a individual name is just a commission charge, which is very, very low on that value of account. So I would start to diversify away from indexes and into more foreign names, dividend payers, etc. Thanks for the call. Now our time is up for this hour. I'm financial advisor Justin Klein, Executive Vice President of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. Now you can reach me directly with a question or comment. Just go to investtalk.com and click on the Contact Justin button. I will get back to you. And on behalf of Steve Peasley and everyone at KPP, thank you for being with us. Let's plan on getting together again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.